The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. That's what time it is. Time for the True Wealth Show on this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. I am your host, Dave Little John, in studio with me as
Matt Dixon.
Literally, as we are coming on the show. So I'm just going to come out with it. We're going to talk about what's going on in Iran here. And Matt goes, right as I'm about to start the show, he's like, I know everybody. I know the guys personally. I know who's gone. It's tough. And I'm like, oh, jeez.
Been there seven times.
Oh, I'm hearing this in a Trump-style voice.
Yep.
I know them all. They died like dogs. Like, oh, jeez.
I know their children. Their children's children.
So, okay. Well, yeah. So there you go. We're talking about war in Iran today. Actually, you know, it's not so much war in Iran. That is, I don't know enough about it to be dangerous. And frankly, everything I think that I have learned about it is dangerous because I don't know how reliable a lot of news sources are right now. Right? I mean, like, you're getting a whole mixed bag.
Yeah, because we've heard, like, stories, and then, like, 10 hours later, they completely change the narrative of the story.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a minute, that was misleading. You're saying we blew up a school with a bunch of girls in it. Oh, but no, actually, it was Iran. They shot out a missile. The missile was bad. Yeah. And then they hit their own civilians. So it's like, come on. Like,
yeah. By we, I mean not us.
Yeah. So.
Like, oh, okay. Well, good talk. Yeah, there's so much right now. You know what is probably one of the saddest states of the country right now? The fact that news like that people will use, and it's literally like, well, if it makes my team look good, then yes.
Even if it's not even remotely
true. Terrible news, right?
Yeah.
Like, imagine the idea that, oh, well, we blew up a girl's school, and there's some people who are like, you know, yes, it makes the current administration look bad. And I'm like, whoa, there's no point at which this is good, period.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I don't care who did it. The fact that it happened at all, that's a disaster, everybody.
Right.
That's a human tragedy because these are non-combatants. They're not military. Like, I mean, the war is bad already, but at least soldiers sign up for war. They know what they're getting into. I mean, if you're going to argue that some people don't get to sign up, fair. Fair, right? But for the most part, especially in the United States, volunteer military, right? So nobody's conscripted at this point, and hopefully won't be, right? We're still counting on that being the case. But I can't say the same for Iran. I don't know what the story is there.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, soldiers are not the same as civilians, and particularly civilian children.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway. Yeah. Good. Got that out of the way. Thanks for right out of the gate making it awkward.
Yeah. How else can I make it awkward? What would you like to know?
Oh, I'm so not even going to serve it up. Like, you'll find a way.
You're like, if anyone will derail this show, it'll be Matt.
Matt, I can't take you there.
Nope.
Nope. Nope. That is... Nope. We're not going to do that. All right. So the bigger question here, I mean, we are already fielding these questions. I'm going to just sort of lay it out there for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting investors, and some of them, it's through the grapevine. Like, this is secondary stuff where I'm not even hearing it directly, but so-and-so said to me that, you know, the
second
war means
hand,
that the stock market's going to crash, or should I go buy gold, or, you know, are we all going to need to learn Chinese? I mean, like literally crazy stuff is coming out, and I'm like, whoa, okay,
I think we should break down some facts, right? Like, you know, the interesting thing in all of this is I think the ratio is for every 10% that gas goes up in price, that the U.S. dollar strengthens by 1%.
Help me out with that connection. Like, why would the dollar strengthen as gas goes up?
Well, what I was going to get to with that is typically when the dollar is, you know, losing value, that's where you see the gold, because you mentioned gold, and that's what I was kind of keying in on here.
Aha.
If the dollar is strengthening, then you would expect gold and silver to be going lower in value, because those two things tend to walk in opposite directions. So if the dollar is strengthening, gold and silver should be going down.
And let's clarify for our listeners, what does dollar strengthening mean?
I mean, you'd probably have a lot better definition for this than I would, but I think part of it is just like, what are your dollars able to purchase?
Yeah, I think that's like the definition, I think,
right.
is it's purchasing power.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we compare purchasing power to, well, what if I was able to, so like, how's the dollar strength compared to another currency? How much of it can you buy?
Right. Yeah.
If you can buy more of the currency with the dollar than you used to, then the dollar got stronger because it's capable of purchasing more mm-hmm. of that alternative currency. And in this case, it's a stronger dollar means it's capable of purchasing more gold. That sounds backwards at first. You're like, a stronger dollar buys more. Yeah.
Yeah.
If gold is cheaper, it's because the dollar is more valuable.
You know what's interesting about this war? And I just thought of this right here in the moment, not on the notes, not on a script. What had we been seeing from the dollar over the last 12 months to 16 months?
Yeah, well, it had been, at least relative to gold, softening.
Yeah, the dollar had been losing value. It had been weakening. And I think in, what was it? So for 2025, didn't the dollar, and you'd have to Google check me on that, fact check me, I thought the dollar lost over 10% of its value in 2025.
And I guess
it might have been
what?
Closer to 15%.
Yeah, let's try the old ChatGPT and ask it. So
right. You know. And so I'm thinking, well, if, you know, we're going to have a war that's drawn out for a few months and oil prices do go up, could we see a surge in the dollar that makes up for some of the lost value in 2025? Could the dollar kind of balance back out?
Well, it could. Now, let's talk about this. We'll unpack this a little bit more just so our listeners understand. This is how this all connects, by the way. I'm about to try to draw some plumbing connections for you in the economy. These are not predictive, unfortunately.
Right.
Right? What we're going to talk about doesn't necessarily drive the stock market higher or lower, but it drives some of the underlying indicators that oftentimes are correlated with market movement. Right? What really drives the movement in the stock market? It's supply and demand.
Correct.
Okay. But what influences supply and demand? A lot of these other things that contribute to how much free capital is in the marketplace, whether people are confident about spending or not, and so forth. So first off, I used ChatGPT, the free version, right? There's not, nobody's getting fancy with this one, just so you can go check it yourself too. It said, hey, how much value did the dollar lose in 2025? And it did what I'm glad it did, which it says, well, what are you comparing it against?
Mm.
But in general, against foreign currencies, it fell about 7 to 11% over the last year. And so that just means it's able to purchase that much less foreign currency.
Mm-hmm.
So that would also explain part of why gold was going up in value.
Right.
Part of it. Okay. When we look at what that means, a weaker dollar oftentimes means it's a little bit more expensive for us to buy imported goods, but it's cheaper for us to export goods, which means on balance, it's not necessarily good or bad.
Bad.
For the
it
economy.
Just changes the trade dynamics.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? Historically speaking, there is a trade deficit, meaning the United States imports more than we export.
Right.
So strong dollar at least means that our imports are cheaper and we do more importing than exporting.
Right. And so we have been seeing, it sounds like, maybe more of a little bit of a skew now to where we're starting to be able to actually export again. Would
well,
you say that
I,
that's fair?
I,
or do you think, or are we just not there yet?
Well, I want to start with the, let's talk about export more, right? We're still able to export.
Right.
Right. We haven't not been able to export. So I'm just careful with the phraseology here. For one, there's some compliance wonk somewhere that's going to listen to this and say, you got to say it right. You know, you can't say there's no exports. It would mean theoretically, if the dollar was weaker and we didn't have some kind of trade policy that was interfering, so tariffs and that kind of stuff that would
right.
also influence pricing. But provided that the trade lanes were otherwise open,
mm-hmm.
cheaper should mean easier for more exports to occur because the counterparty can afford more.
Yeah.
So yes would be the long-winded answer to your frame up there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the problem is it's not a direct, if we have a softer dollar, then we will have more exports. No, it's not that directly connected. It would be easier to get there.
Right.
For other countries.
It doesn't automatically make it happen overnight.
Right.
It just gives more incentive for that behavior to take place.
Because you have to consider what's being imported too, right? Let's look at Colombia as a major, I'm just picking out of a hat, I don't even know that this is real, but let's say Colombia exports coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, why would they import coffee from the United States? Their major export is coffee. It doesn't make a ton of sense for them to import it. Other than like on a highly specialized basis, there's a few people in Colombia that just want coffee from America. And I don't even know why that would be the case, but you get my idea, mm-hmm. right? So that you may not even with a soft dollar encourage a trade where the other party has no interest in anything.
Just
we're
because
trading
the values are so far apart, right?
Well, also because they don't need it.
Yeah.
Right. If you look at that, it's a little bit like, here's the joke, right? It's that, you know, how do you sell ice to Eskimos? You don't have to, right? Because they're surrounded by ice. Well, if you're surrounded by coffee, you don't need to import coffee,
mm-hmm.
right? You might import something else that you don't have. And that's the funny part about tariffs. It's probably the best argument for why tariffs are problematic. One of the best arguments is trade is not unilateral. It's not like, well, you don't always get equal trade. Sometimes somebody has, right? If I go to a store and I buy things, they don't necessarily buy things back from me. So, yes, we're exchanging the money that I have, but they're not saying, oh, well, why don't we, instead of you giving me money, you can trade in financial services to the store and we'll just make a bar. No, they don't need that from me. So they'd rather have my money.
And it is
and
hard.
And then they'll swap it around.
It is hard on a country when all you do is import, right? Like the money just goes out, but you're not selling goods and services to other countries where money's coming in. And I can see kind of.
Yeah, I think that there are economic scenarios that when you really map them out, it gets trickier because you have different strengths of economy and you're importing, exporting different things. And the perception of value is not always the same,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, your perception of value of having a smartphone may not be the same as the perception of value of a smartphone for somebody in undeveloped Africa, where they don't have access to it and it wouldn't do much for them. It's like, what's the point? So, so there are differences in terms of how we would value things in terms of demand also, right? There's just no demand in that area, so what you're exporting doesn't matter to them.
Mm.
So there has to be a supply and demand balance as well. That's why there's layers of complexity to it.
So what are some of your predictions on how this war is going to kind of shape up, how it's going to go, and then what the impact to the markets is, you know, in the short term? Do you kind of want to look at where we're at today and where we might be going?
Well, no.
Oh. All right.
He's like, but since you're going to ask me, I'll get cornered into that.
Yeah.
I don't want to make the prediction because it gives me an opportunity to be wrong, and the odds of that are still pretty good. But what I will say is,
so we're going to ask Emma. We're going to make her make all the predictions.
This is getting good.
Yeah.
We'll unpack it. Let's do this. Let's grab a break. We're running a tad long, so we'll get this break in. When we come back, we'll talk about it. Well, maybe we'll try to handicap it. What do you say?
Sure.
All right, stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
All right, Matt, how do they get the podcast? This is a quiz for you.
I think they go to the website at littlejohnfs.com.
Okay, he gets to keep his job for at least one more day. Woohoo!
Can someone give me a drum roll and an applause in the
background? Yeah, we need the button where you can drop the sound cues, except the whole show would be sound effects. I would not. It'd be terrible.
As long as we had lots of like the 1980s lasers in the background, then I'd be golden.
Or
with that.
If you've ever heard the Jim Cramer show, where it's like the guy falling off the glass. It's got the different bear sound and the bull sound and the bell sound.
I really want the Ron Burgundy whammy. Like, I want some of that going on.
Yeah, that's probably copyrighted. I don't even know.
We can get around it.
if we can get you, let's record Matt saying bad impressions of famous things, but not so bad that we don't know what they are.
Ooh, I can be down for that.
All right, it's got a future. That's all I'm saying.
Yep.
So we're talking about really where we're headed with this today is,
yeah.
So the U.S. is now at war. I think it's technically called war. I think it's or a military conflict or something. I don't know if Congress has declared war yet.
War is a pretty extreme term for what I think this is, because last I heard, we already sunk all their ships. And haven't we been doing this for like 2 days? So that doesn't sound like much of a war. It sounds like an annihilation.
Well, I will say that Matt likes to, he's introduced this to, introduced me to Polymarket, which
yeah.
is really fun because it predicts different things. It basically allows people to bet on this. So there's $7 million in volume on this bet so far. Will the Iranian regime fall by June 30th? Mm-hmm. And right now there's a 40% chance of that occurring.
By what date? June 30th?
June 30th. That seems...
That's a long. That's a lot longer than I expected it would be,
yeah.
right? Because, like, that's multiple months out, 3 months out.
And then how about, will the U.S. or Israel strike Iran on March 4th? 100% chance, and on March 5th, a 99% chance. Will the U.S. invade Iran before 2027? Still a 33% chance. Polymarket's fascinating, by the way.
Interesting.
This is not... They're not. I'm not telling you predictions. I'm telling you
what the betting markets are
yeah,
saying.
It's yeah, it's a betting market where people can look at this. And there are more than there's more than one market for this, right? But
mm-hmm.
that's one of them that we just kind of pulled up to look at, and I thought that well, is fascinating.
And what's crazy is like it rarely, like I've watched, you know, bets come out. I was watching it during the election, right? And that was what was really crazy is on there, you know, you saw Trump with a lead in the betting markets where they were predicting that he would get in. And as the election started taking place, I think you were actually looking at it with me when it was happening mm-hmm. in real time, you know, it'd be like, oh, Trump has a 62% chance, 67% chance, 73%. And it was just... I don't know what, an hour or two ahead of real-time information it felt like that we were getting. And
now, interestingly enough, that illustrates another key point, what you just described. The accuracy goes higher as the event approaches.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're a ways out.
Right.
So saying, will the Iranian regime fall by June 30th? And we're here on March 3rd today. I've just dated the show, by the way. So if for some reason the show is ever rebroadcasted, the reason we're rebroadcasting it would be because what we talked about in terms of like war and conflict and how it works in the economy are still relevant. Otherwise, I don't know that we'll do it again. Yeah, I don't know if it'll be a rerun ever. Boy, that was harder to say than I thought it should be.
Just say rerun like 30 times over really fast and you'll never stumble with it again. Rerun, yeah. Rerun.
I'm out. Not happening right now. So suffice it to say, we're in this scenario where we're trying to handicap what's going on with the marketplace. And the interesting thing about it to me is while the Polymarket world may want to make these calls and it can get down to hours,
mm-hmm.
these are people betting kind of up to the last minute. It's more like sports betting almost. It's like, what's the
yeah.
outcome in the next hour or two? And those to me seem more like actual bets. And then as you get closer to the event, the spreads start to change because the outcome becomes more known.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start to see the odds skew to the more probable result as it becomes more obvious.
Well, what's interesting about that, did you say June 30th?
Yes.
Yeah. If I'm Polymarket and I'm setting these bets, I'm trying to get about a 50-50 spread on the bets, right? I want about 50% of the bets to be on one side and about 50% on the other.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Just trying to keep the – you don't want it so skewed to where you're just losing buckets of money because it's an easy thing to guess. And so what that tells me is the odds makers that are behind the scenes were looking at everything and that they picked that date because they felt like there's, you know, about a 50-50 chance that it could go either way based on that date. And so the market really is, in this instance, I believe, pricing in about a 3-month event.
So wild enough, I just looked up the March 31st, so end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Will the regime fall by March 31? It's estimating a 17% chance.
So not great odds.
Now, how about December 31?
Oh, I bet the odds go over 70%.
50.
Ooh, geez. So they're pricing this thing as a lot longer event than I guess originally presumed.
Yep.
That would be a long
Currently
event.
Currently says a 62% chance.
Well, when are midterms?
The regime survives the military strikes.
When's the midterms?
November.
Interesting. So we might not actually have any resolve by...
I don't think that's what that says. Because the war could be over and the existing regime could be the one that's still in power and they have acquiesced and stopped and, you know, the deals have been made. So it's just to say that the existing regime may still be in place. Mm-hmm. If I look at that, I know I'm not supposed to handicap these things. And just so you know, I'm not giving investment advice nor betting advice right now. But if I was looking at that, I could understand why the regime staying in place is still relatively likely. Now, the current leadership, they're probably not going to be. Like,
the last guy didn't even last 24 hours.
Yeah, like a lot of those people are going to be probably killed in this process.
Mm-hmm.
And the folks that are left are going to be the folks that, like, if they step into that, it's going to, because they're saying, well, let's keep some shell of our government still working.
Yeah.
But you have to keep in mind that we have a history in the United States of installing leadership into positions. So they don't need the regime to fall in order for new leadership and a new direction to take place. If a regime falls, you have to rebuild the government. So it may be in the United States' best interest to preserve the government, but put it under a more friendly group of people within that regime. So that's why it's interesting, is like, how do we define regime? My guess is that Polymarket is completely comfortable letting it be somewhat ambiguous because it makes the betting market more profitable for them.
True.
So anyway, it's just a different way to analyze this. And by the way, I think it's really critical that we take a step back and try to assess these things with as little emotion as possible. Very difficult to do in times like this because the markets are moving and fear shows up. But one of the things I do think we should address right now is there's an elephant in the room to me about military events and market performance.
What's the big elephant?
The big elephant is that historically speaking, about 70% of the time, the investment markets are actually higher 12 months later than at the start of a conflict. And so that's some of the things that I want to talk about, is that it's not untypical for markets to decline at the going into, like leading up to an initial onset of military conflict.
Right.
But it is more common than not that the markets both recover and then go on to positive outcomes within the next 12 months.
I mean, it kind of makes sense because you also got to think there's a lot of spending that goes on during a war, right? Like the U.S. government is spending money. We're sending out, you know, $7 million missiles to shoot down these $35,000 drones. And we got to move personnel. There's just a lot of spending that has to take place in order to finance a war. And so it can be an economic stimulus, right? Like, there's a lot of people that are going to be getting new order flows from the government to replenish stuff.
And I'm not convinced that anything changes materially at home. If you consider that we haven't had an onshore war since, I think, the Civil War.
Well, we did. Pearl Harbor got hit.
So,
but
that was the last military event that has occurred on the United States shoreline.
Right.
And you're right. Pearl Harbor did happen. And so I will stand corrected on that statement. That was it.
Yeah, that's it.
And prior to that, I think I was thinking more like land war, where troops landed and we actually had an event. But nevertheless, Pearl Harbor is a fine example. I mean, it's I think that was perfectly relevant. So it was a good call. But prior to that, like, we just haven't had domestic wars.
No.
And so what that means is that a lot of our domestic activity continues.
And it continues on at a relatively similar pace.
Yeah. Now, I have one word for why it has to continue. It's not what you expect. It's remarkably underwhelming, but it's still really accurate.
What's that?
Metabolism.
Explain.
We all still have to eat. Even though there's a war going on, every one of us still is going to continue to eat, which means the economy will continue to grind. It is a biological requirement, and that forces activity on all of us. So you're going to have to do something to make sure that there's food that shows up when it needs to be there. So it's happening.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that we can get ahead of ourselves and let the emotions start telling us, oh, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be terrible. That is not necessarily terribly accurate.
And there's a lot less disruption too. You think about World War II, there were people leaving their jobs to go overseas and fight. And, you know, in an instance like this, we're not really seeing that, you know, like,
and I think
you're not leaving your factory job to go grab a gun.
Why don't we do this? Let's grab a break. Right, we'll do that, and we'll grab it because when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the examples that didn't work well. Like, when were times that it was bad? What was the backdrop? And then we can compare and contrast a little bit, maybe help set some of the understanding of what's going on. Sound good?
I like that.
Stick around. We'll be back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn
and Matt Dixon.
All right, Matt.
Yes.
You are convinced there's a global recession? Is that what you mean?
Well, I love big headlines. So I'm a sucker for like the extremes. You tell me that the world is flooding or burning or whatever, it's like, ooh, like, let's talk about that.
Matt is, by the way, Matt is the ultimate, he's like the marketer's dream. Because if he had a good burrito for lunch, it was the best burrito ever. And tomorrow, if he has another like fantastic, I don't know, piece of like tacos, let's go with tacos, right? He has tacos, you're like,
yeah,
they were the best tacos ever. Better than the burrito from yesterday? It's like, oh yeah. Then he could go back later and have the same burrito, and it's like, it was even better than the tacos. So I love that about Matt is there's a little bit of recency bias. He's what we would call a front-weighted moving average. So yeah. Forward weighted moving average.
Let me do some product reviews. Give me some free samples, and I'll sell
more. You will get great reviews from Matt. But if you ask him what he thinks about it a month later, it's too late.
Yeah, that ship sailed. But I love a flashy headline. And Yahoo put out an article that was like global recession tied to oil, and I'm like, what could this be? And you know, you start reading the articles, and asking someone today over a text message that knows this stuff more than I do, and it's like, well, you know, I mean, you could make a case for it. Is it likely? Now that's a whole nother issue, but could you make a case that if oil is disrupted, that
you totally could. And interestingly enough, could you make a case that this is going to sell more solar panels too? Also yes, except that a lot of the solar panels come from China, which is going to be interesting.
The world, we do know that the world runs on oil. Like, it just, you can't get away from that. I think the question is just largely, like, how much of a disruption is there? Is the Strait of Hamas, or however you say it, does that end up closing? And for how long? I know that Trump really doesn't want it to close, and he's now offered to have military, like, escorts for ships to go through that area so that shipping lanes can remain open. And we're even talking about possibly paying the insurance premiums for these big ships to keep moving product. So I think where there's a will, there's a way. And if the United States military wants to get involved in making sure that stuff stays open, there's a decent chance that it does stay open. You know what I mean? Like, if we're willing to throw our military at it, we might actually see stuff continue to move. But it doesn't help when you see Iran bombing some of the major oil fields in the Middle East. Like, that's not very productive for oil to continue to be able to move.
It's not. I mean, suffice it to say, it's pretty destabilized in that region.
Yeah.
My sense is that this is, we talked about this a little bit earlier today. It's this idea that from a purely logistical standpoint, Iran's not going to have the supply and logistics chain to extend this for a terribly long time. So in that respect, it may sort of get choked out in sort of old-fashioned siege style,
mm-hmm.
but like a modern-day warfare version of a siege. So it'll be interesting to see how, and interesting is always air quoting, right? It's going to be a thing, though, to see how this plays out. I still don't know that it has the kind of disruption that melts the economy down and causes a 30-40%
right.
correction in the markets.
Well, what's interesting in all of this is you could see, you know, I'm just theorizing, right? So take mm-hmm. this all with a grain of salt. But, you know, you hear the words global recession. Mm-hmm. I think there are countries that could really get, you know, hurt by higher oil prices. And obviously the United States likes to run on cheap oil. But I also look at this and say, well, Venezuelan oil is now on the table,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, we have kind of an open pipeline to bring in oil from Venezuela, refine it in the Gulf Coast, and sell it in our country. And that's a huge, huge, huge supply of oil. And so could our economy still be okay? I think you could make a case that we actually have access to so much oil that even if a lot of other countries like China are getting cut off from oil, it's like, well, we still have almost a virtual endless supply now of it. And I think that's why today on the news, what did Trump say? He said, hey, listen, we're open for business. China, do you want to buy our oil? Like, what countries want to buy our oil? And I think he's just playing the big dog in the room that says, we're going to always have a supply because we're going to basically use our military to control assets. And if people want to buy from us, well, now you can buy from us.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that sounds kind of crazy, but...
Well, it aligns with history. You're actually angling at a point that I was hoping to get to anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you really are, because energy independence was, if you look historically, remember I said 70% of the time, we ended up with scenarios where military conflicts resulted in positive markets a year later.
Mm-hmm.
When didn't that happen?
That's a great question. I don't know that.
So I can give you a couple of times. It happened in 1973 during the Arab oil embargo, where we had a 48% drop in the stock market, and it took almost 2 years for it to bottom out. It was 630 days of decline for that 48% slide.
I'm ignorant. I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was before you were born. It was before I was born, so it's a while ago. But it took over 2,100 days for that to recover. So if you math that out, that was a 6-7 year slide from 1973 until almost 80 or so.
Okay.
And so that was the about the time Reagan took office and they started the concept of trickle-down economics and so forth. But that was a really long slide.
Yeah, that
really
is.
Really long.
That's a big one.
Now, the next longest one was in 2022. The markets declined just over 25%, took 215 days for it to happen, and it took a little over 500 days for it to recover, which is about a year and a third.
That was, okay, yeah.
And then we went on to see 23, 24, and 25 be really big market years in recovery. The reason that this is super interesting to me is, what made the oil embargo so painful?
So, yeah, refresh my memory, because I don't know.
Well, the oil embargo is when we could not get oil and gas into the United States.
Oh, so that isn't that when we set the like I-5 speed limits
speed
and all that
limits,
stuff to try and preserve
have,
oil?
Yeah, EPA
so you're
fuel
saying
requirements.
That the market didn't pop back largely because we couldn't get the oil. There was a shortage of oil.
It was a significant component. The cost of energy radically changed during that time. We had really high interest rates.
Can I give you a Matt conspiracy theory?
I guess you better.
I think that this whole Iran thing was on the table, and it was thought about and planned out well in advance. I don't think this was a knee-jerk reaction. And I think Trump was playing a game of chess where he knew, I have to take out Maduro, and I have to secure Venezuela and have that oil pipeline established so that we can do what we need to do in Iran. I think that was his thought, right? Because if you go into Iran and you don't have Venezuelan oil, where are we going to get it from? Because largely we were depending on Saudi Arabia for a lot of our oil.
You want to hear the Dave theory?
So I think that it was literally like, we'll be okay as long as we got Venezuelan oil. We can go in there and wreck some stuff in Iran. What's your theory?
My theory is that it was the fact that China has been building more power plants and they still have run a lot of them on diesel or on oil. And so while China's bringing on nuclear power faster than the United States, though. And so in order to slow the progress so that China does not run away with the AI race, the United States had to choke their supply somewhat to drive up their cost of energy and had to find a way to control ours. And so one of the things that we've talked about is this ability for the United States to pivot to liquid natural gas as a way to power a lot of the power plants domestically.
Well, that would make sense. That it's like an AI race. What used to be like a Cold War is,
yes.
And add on top of that also rare earth minerals, right?
Right.
Like getting down to even a more granular level. It's like, we are in an AI race. What's some of the critical stuff that you have to have for chips and all the other things? You have to have rare earth minerals, and China conveniently sits on the world's largest supply, bar none. And so it's like, well, if they have all the rare earth minerals, and like you're playing at a disadvantage if you don't have the materials to build the AI.
Which and is also why, okay, well, let's choke the thing they need to keep growing
exactly.
So that they have to come to the bargaining table.
Yep.
And I think that those all fit together. Incidentally, there's some videos circulating around from back in the early 80s with Donald Trump, way before he was ever in politics, talking about some of the problems with the Iranian regime.
Oh, really?
And it's fascinating because this is not new stuff, and he's been remarkably consistent in his approach, his principles behind this. So the fact that they can point to these videos from back in the day and bring them up, and it's like, yep, he was talking about this even, you know, decades ago.
Right.
So it is fascinating that, you know, this is where we're at. But I do think what's interesting is when you consider the market dynamic, the last time that we had a really disastrous market dynamic that took a long, long time to recover from, there was an energy crisis. When we had 2022, we were coming out of COVID and we were coming off of a massive money printing campaign. And so we had a big inflationary deal to navigate. Similar thing, huge inflation during the oil embargoes too. You know, we saw treasuries that you could get 30-year bonds at like 15-18%.
Well, say this is a 3 to 6 month conflict and oil does go over $100 a barrel, stays there. How bad of an inflationary cycle might we get into if, you know, we can't control energy prices the way that we have been for the last few years? So is that going to be super inflationary where it's going to cause its own set of headaches? Or do you think that we can control that?
I think the midterms are going to be meaningful because it's going to depend on how aggressive environmental policy is. Because
right.
If we're able to produce our own domestic fuel sources, it softens the blow. If not, then it's a different issue.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how to handicap that right now.
Well, and there's
now
such a huge difference, too, between oil at $85 a barrel and $120. Like, that's a radical difference, you know. And so I think part of it is, we might experience some inflation, but we don't know where oil goes to and how long it stays there for.
Yeah.
That's going to be really, I think, a telling sign of the issues we might face.
Yeah. Well, There's one other elephant in the room that should be discussed. That is, you know, how is this going to affect policy? I don't want to tell you which policy because we have to take a break. And if I don't tell you, then you maybe stick around for the next segment where then I will tell you. See, this is like
I love it.
except it's like the worst teaser out there because it's so direct. Like, I'm not going to tell you, but if you stick around, I will when they come back. All right, you listen to The True Well Show. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're on KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Radio Show. Matt, yeah. Where are we going for the last few minutes?
The Caribbean.
Interesting. We'll never make it. We better stay on topic.
Okay, darn. I think we left our listeners off kind of on this theory of like, hey, oil prices are fluctuating, and we don't really fully know how long this thing in Iran's going to take place for. So let's try and talk about the markets and how they might be affected and what matters to our investors.
Yeah, and I promised there was a policy issue that we hadn't really discussed, and I think to most financial folks it's pretty obvious. To a lot of the folks that don't necessarily pay attention to this, you'd be like, huh, what do you mean? So if oil prices go way up, that is kind of like a headwind, mm-hmm. right? It's just going to be, or like dragging a boat anchor, right? Backpack full of rocks, whatever you want to call it, but it's going to slow you down. It's extra weight to carry for the economy because energy ends up being a fairly systemic cost, right? It kind of affects almost everything because we all have to use it to make things go. Mm-hmm. So if you have a higher energy cost, that is going to slow the economy down. Well, the Federal Reserve is trying to negotiate with whether or not to raise or lower rates to manage inflation. And so it can affect the way the Federal Reserve can execute on policy. They don't necessarily want to raise rates into a period where we have really high fuel prices because everything's getting more expensive, and that more expensive should start to slow inflation down, but we're seeing fuel inflation slowing down the rest of the economy. But if the economy is slowing, which it has been, and now you have an inflationary component in fuel, you don't want to cut rates because it might actually drive inflation even more. So they're kind of cornered.
Interesting. So yeah, that's kind of a cocktail.
It is. And so they're really having to assess just how much of a price move and what is going to be the economic drag that it creates. And is it, or economic drag, so is it going to be inflationary in the wrong areas or deflationary in the wrong areas? And does that mean that we need to have a change in interest rate policy?
Man, you know what I wouldn't want to be right now?
Jerome Powell.
Yeah, I would not want to be the Fed chair. Because I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, the market kind of started to price in some rate cuts. Mm-hmm. And now we've got some inflationary pressure with energy, so I probably don't want to cut rates right now, but if I don't, then the market is going to be like, well, we didn't price that in, and that's even more downward pressure on the market. So
right.
I guess
the Fed is not supposed to care about the markets.
They're
the
market's
not
supposed
part of its mandate,
to. Yeah,
but I just, it's hard to see that they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's one of those things where I know we're just playing for fun. It's church league, right? It's not about whether or not we win or lose. Really? Well, why are you throwing so many elbows and cussing all the time?
Right.
Because like, yeah. I want to win.
Right. And yeah, that's not a position I envy right now. This is a very, very tough one, I think.
It really is. That's the part that's probably the hardest one. And so when people say, what's going to happen with the markets? I'm quite confident that this gets worked out. And I don't think the conflict lasts nearly as long as we've seen historically. And the reason for that is because none of it's been lasting as long as it did historically. Mm. You know, the fact that, so the Russia-Ukraine event, that in 2022 when that happened, it's still going on.
Well,
that
I
war
was
is still
say,
happening right now.
So the wild card in all of this, I think. So Iran in and of itself should be handled quickly. But if China wants to supply Iran with a bunch of drones and missiles and all sorts of stuff that make it a headache on us to contain this thing, that's to me the wild card in all of this. But you have to question, is that what China wants? Do they want a long, drawn-out conflict where they can't get their cheap oil? I don't think so.
I don't either. I think that China is playing a longer game than that.
But you know who might want it to be long and drawn out? Russia. Because what are they sitting on? Yeah. Their entire economy is oil.
Yep.
And so if China can't get it from the Saudi Arabia, and now they're the only guy on the block with the oil, they can basically charge whatever they want, and Russia gets rich. So if I'm Putin, I'm looking at this and saying, thanks, United States. What a golden goose this is.
Yeah. It hadn't really occurred to me, because now you're going to get the whole thing about, see, I told you Trump loved Putin.
Well.
Right? And it's like, well, that's interesting.
I've got theories for days.
Yeah.
It's a very
deep,
dark.
They don't even have to be right. We're on the radio. You can just throw a theory out there.
I'll just tell you exactly. If I say it with enough confidence, I bet you a lot of people believe me.
Oh, my goodness.
I should be a politician, huh?
Full disclaimer. Yeah. This is not investment advice nor predictions.
All right. I'm announcing a Senate run. 2032. Wow. You heard it right here.
Okay.
Are you voting for me?
No.
Dang. my own boss won't vote for me.
I'm like,
Emma, what about you? Do I got to vote?
I'm looking at him going like, I'm going to need to see your policy positions, Matthew.
My policy is, you know, just be like all the other politicians. Whatever gets me rich, right?
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to triangulate. That's my policy. Oh, geez.
Man.
Well, yeah, that depends. Do we also get the inside information? That's a joke, by the way. That's a joke. All right, look, in the remaining seconds here, for those of you out there that are wondering how this might affect your investments, we do have some ways to do risk modeling, and we can give you a sense of how much risk is embedded in your investment strategy. If you are interested in having something like that done, you do not have to be a client. We can still run this. It's very easy for us to do. Give us a call. How do they reach us, Matt?
Yeah, 541-375-0898, or shoot us an email at info@littlejohnfs.com.
Okay, so there you go. That's how you reach us. But we're out of time for today, so we better run. So until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon,
2032. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to The True Wealth Show on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.